time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's good to have you with us.
This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're the proud recipient of many awards. We're just the best recipient we could have is having you as our listener. Before we start, I want to make sure you're listening in on the Licking on Leadership program that we're doing. We've launched that on Saturdays. We now have got five podcasts out. It's running through the Licking on Lending stream at this time, just so that we continue to make people aware of it. Go check it out. We had Bill Cosgrove as our guest this past Saturday. We've had so many on there, and I encourage you to go check it out. Today in the Hot Topic section, we got Sean Buckner, who's the president and CEO of Informative Research. Also, Mike Koontz is going to be here with us, president of Lenders One, giving us an update of everything going on here at the conference. Let's say a special thank you to the MBA. Saw our friends there. If you have not signed up for the Mortgage Action Alliance, MAA, MA, I encourage you to do so. Also, special thank you goes out to our sponsors, ArchMI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program, Black Knight, which is the leading provider of integrated software and data and analytics solutions that facilitate and automate many of the business processes across homeownership lifecycle. Finastra, the third largest fintech company in the world with 10,000 employees with offices in 42 countries serving 9,000 companies. That's pretty cool. Also, we have the Mortgage Collaborative as well as Velma as well as others coming on board. We've got some new sponsors. Can't wait to tell you all about it. We're looking forward, folks, to getting on with the program here. We're dialed in from Scottsdale at the Lenders One Winter Conference at the beautiful Westin Hotel. We're honored to have you. Before we go any further, let's run out to Rob Van Raphorst for an update on the MBA Mortgage Minute. Here you go.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA joined a letter signed by a broad cross-section of housing groups calling on the Senate to confirm Brian Montgomery as the Assistant Secretary for Housing and Federal Housing Administration Commissioner. This week, the Senate will consider a bipartisan regulatory relief bill led by Senate Banking Chairman Mike Crapo, which will include MBA-supported proposals such as SAFE Act amendments and targeted TRID fixes. In mortgage applications last week, we saw an increase of 2.7% from 1 week earlier, and the average contract interest rate from a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage remained unchanged at 4.64%. This year's National Advocacy Conference is being held April 24th through the 25th in Washington, D.C., and will feature HUD Secretary Ben Carson and Senate Banking Committee Chairman Mike Crapo. Thanks for joining us this week on the Mortgage Minute.
So true.
Mortgage Minute, a lot of good information in there. We're going to run over to Les Parker for the Loan Logics, get that macro outlook on what's going on in the market. See what they put together for us this
Thanks,
week.
Thanks, Dave. This is Market Logics Live, sponsored by Loan Logics. One pill makes you wander, one pill makes you crawl, and the one the G4 gives you doesn't do anything at all. Last week, new Fed Chairman Jay Powell provided certainty that the Fed will tighten without fear of stock hiccups. The effect on mortgage rates depends on how long investors believe in the major central bank's matrix. When investors stop taking the blue pill and swallow the red pill, then they will run from overvalued assets that cannot handle the truth. Who knows where the rabbit hole of freedom from the matrix leads? The Fed keeps selling no pain is worth no gain. Then there are those who give hope to the belief that the pain of volatility is worth the pain of rising economic activity. Which pill do you choose? These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Good. Always fun to listen to what music parody they have for us. Let's get over to our good friend, Joe Farr, who's going to give us an update on the markets. Joe, what you got?
Today's kind of a down day for mortgage-backed security prices. We're down 8/32. It started dropping about 10:30, a little bit after the ISM index came out, the services index came out, but it coincided with the stock market starting a rally about the same time. And so it really didn't seem to be directly related to the ISM services number, but that number was really pretty good. It was just shy of last month's ISM services number, and that was the best reading since 2005. You know, the fact that that came in pretty strong, along with some comments recently, you know, Trump has tweeted that, you know, maybe if Mexico and Canada will agree to a more U.S.-friendly NAFTA agreement, that he might not implement the tariffs on steel and aluminum, saying that maybe all this is just a ploy, you know, a ploy to get a better deal. So there seems to be a little bit less concern about the potential trade wars and the effects of trade wars on the stock market. So the stock market, which was down a little less than 100 at 10:30, is now up about 200. So it's been a nice rally for stocks. But the downside of that is that MBS prices have fallen, and therefore mortgage rates have risen. We'll see if that continues during the day. We're at the lows for the day as far as mortgage-backed security prices go. Looking at last week, it was a volatile week for stocks and bonds. For the week, stocks fell over 770 points on the Dow. But surprisingly, MBS prices and therefore mortgage rates had very little net change.
So, Joe, right there, do you think that that means that volatility is the new normal? I mean, is this just we're going to have big swings in the market and that's just how it is?
Well, it certainly has been true from a stock market perspective. I mean, 1% swings in the Dow have been common. So, yes, I think the answer is yes, it is going to become more volatile, at least until we get through, well, I don't know what would cause it to not be, to be quite honest. As Les Parker said, he predicted 2018 would be volatile, and so far his predictions are true.
Yeah, he was right.
Last week was volatile as well, although, like I said, the stocks ended up lower and MBS prices ended up with little change. And the market reacted on Tuesday pretty significantly to Fed Chair Powell's testimony before the House Financial Services Committee. He testified that he believes the economy has strengthened since the Fed last meeting in December. And, of course, the investors took that to mean that maybe they will take a more hawkish path in the meetings to come. So it caused stocks to fall and MBS prices improved. On Wednesday, another down day for stocks pushed investors into bonds. I'm sorry, MBS prices fell on Tuesday, but improved on Wednesday as stock market sold off. Pending home sales came out on Wednesday a little worse than expected, and that should have been favorable for bonds, but it wasn't. The second estimate of fourth quarter GDP came out, and it was revised to 2.5, down from 2.6, but that was pretty much as expected. Then on Thursday, President Trump announced that he would be implementing the tariffs on steel and aluminum. That caused a big sell-off in stocks, and MBS prices improved as the stocks sold off. And they improved even though there was pretty strong data. The ISM Manufacturing Index, which came out last week, beat expectations, and jobless claims fell to the lowest since the year 2000 at 210,000 net new jobless claims. Thursday's gains were reversed on Friday, so there's that volatility again. And then looking at this week, the big event this week is going to be the jobs report. It comes out on Friday. So February's jobs report is expected to reveal that 210,000 net new jobs were created. Unemployment rates falling from 4.1 to 4.0. The rise in average hourly earnings is expected to have slowed just a tenth from January. There's also an ECB meeting this week. Their statement will be released Thursday morning early. Might want to pay attention at that time as well. So. And then in addition, most days this week have Fed speakers. With the reaction to Powell's testimony before Congress last week, Fed speakers this week could move the market. Not a day to relax, continue to pay attention to the market.
Well, it seems like tweets and speakers and testimony before Congress makes things jump around a bit. I was kind of amused last week at our Fed chairman speaking to Congress, and they kept wanting to talk about fiscal policy, like taxes and stuff, and he kept wanting to talk about monetary policy, like supply and Fed funds rates. And it's just astounding to me that the Congress, either they don't understand finance or they're just doing it the grandstand. So I think it's the latter.
No, it's
the grandstand.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Appreciate it so much. That was Joe Farr, everybody, and appreciate the market update. Anyway, we'll run over to Alice Alvey. Alice, good to have you here. You missed all the excitement earlier, or did you?
Oh. No, I was on the line right at 1 o'clock, so I caught the early goings on. But yeah, I wanted to give everybody an update on an RFI that the Federal Housing Finance Agency has published, and this request for information is pretty extensive. They want to pull in information on credit scores. So for those of you who've been around a long time, you know that the Vantage score was created. Gosh, I don't have the year in front of me now, but I know it's been well over 15 years, could be even longer, when, you know, Equifax and TransUnion first got together and said, hey, instead of waiting till reports are run and then the data, let's get together, the three of us, instead of each of us working on our own version of the FICO model, let's the three of us get together and combine a model, put everything that we've all learned, and create the Vantage score is what was the result of those meetings and effort. So the Federal Housing Finance Agency has published a request for information from the industry. They're asking for feedback on the key item is to say, do we want to open the door to, we say, we want options for credit scoring models. The FICO model is older. The Vantage score really does open up the door for many more, millions and millions of borrowers. I mean, they're staggering when you say that there could be more than 10 million borrowers out there who could get a credit score of 600 or better and start to work their way towards homeownership. Their numbers are even bigger when you say, who can even get a score on Vantage versus FICO? So there's 30 to 35 million customers who can't even get a FICO score, but under the Vantage model could at least be scored. And you say, well, what good is that to me, Alice? I don't want a 600 or a 500 credit score in my pipeline anyway, right? But I think the messaging here is once a customer starts to get a score and starts to understand the impact, then they have a path to improvement. If they can't even get scored, they don't even know what it is, then they've really just been alienated from the process. So, I not to mention there is a large group that could be scored, that could be very close to being a part of homeownership. I consider this very similar to what we went through long time ago when we were resistant to credit score in the first place. I don't know, Dave, I know you and Andy and Joe all remember those days as well as me, right? Manual underwriting, when you went line by line down the credit report and when somebody said, hey, we got a score, what? Ooh, I don't know if we trust that. Well, I get the same sense today. I think people need to trust the Vantage score. It's been around a long time. It's got great data. So I would encourage everyone to respond favorably to this particular request for information. And what we're saying is really to look at endorsing option 3. It's the only option that FIFA has offered that allows for competition among credit score developers. And it's the only option that would allow lenders to have a real choice that determines what we say is best for business and consumers. So obviously the other side of that coin is, well, then DU and LP have to be able to accept a Vantage score if that's the route that we're going. And so with FIFA making the ask and the industry responding, yes, go through the effort, I think we might actually have a chance to see some change here. So I'm encouraging everyone to go to Federal Housing Finance Agency's website. They have the proposed rule there. Sorry, it's not a proposed rule. It's a request for information, and you can send out that comment. And if you want to have it, you know, to me, I'll be happy to help you with that. Or you can also email Vantage Score. They've got some great information that you can forward, because I really do think it's time, and it's a great customer service. So that's my heads up for today, Dave, on the FIFA proposed rule. Or I'm sorry. Oh, gosh, I'm so used to saying proposed rule. Everything has to be done by March 30th, so do it now.
Do it now, yeah. One of the things, Alice, are you going to be able to stay on? We've got Sean Buckner, who's the CEO of Informative Research. Unfortunately, Sean, I did not get a chance to listen to your comments, but we're going to have him on. If you're available, you can get some of his thoughts on some of this, if you would like.
That'd be great.
I'd love to get his. Awesome. Good deal. Very good. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate you being here with us so much. We're going to be up with Helen with a tech update. Due to time, we're going to keep things moving along here, but we're going to be right back after this brief word from Jim Jump at Arch MI about Innovative RateStar program.
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about Archemy RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems, through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by Archemy's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archemy.com or archemycu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
You bet, Jim. Appreciate it so much, you being here with us. We've got Alan Pollock sitting here at the table at one of the boom mics with his headphones on. Alan, good to have you here at the conference. Good to be here.
Good to be here. The message here, David, I wanted to give, you know, from the technology aspect of things, it's pretty interesting. It's all about technology and how technology is here forever. And what we need to do is we need to learn how to adapt and learn how to acquire technology. It's not necessarily about the digital mortgage so much and about all the different areas of that people are focusing on, but technology is here. It's not going to replace people. It's going to enhance what we do. And so as we start to adapt to technology and we start to embrace it and we learn how to use it, it's going to make for some really great efficiencies in the process.
It is good. And you sat on the big data meeting. One of the first things we had
keynote
here,
speaker,
the
yeah.
keynote speaker was on big data. That was really interesting. Do you want to share just a real snippet of the nugget that you walked away from out of that conference? I'll
sure.
be out of that first session.
Yeah. So really what they said is data is everywhere, right? Yeah. You carry data with you. Everything, your interactions have data. And so when you look at what all that data is and you break it up, it tells a story. And that story can be visualized into an artistic representation. And so there's some very interesting representations in the keynote speak that really went into how you can look at data. It looked at data in cities and in schools. It looked at data in other countries and how people associate. Actually, a very funny conversation was how people associate their feeling of how they wake up in the morning or how they feel in the afternoon based on weather patterns.
That was interesting. Yeah,
it was.
And how they're involving people involved in the big data. There's some innovative things going on here.
There is. So we should learn from data. We should continue to embrace data. And there'll be a lot of great artistic ways to visualize.
That was really interesting, how they're starting to represent it artistically. Thanks so much. We're running a little bit behind schedule because of the start here, Alan. So we're going to go get Michael on here. I know Andy Schell, the Prophet Doctor, is coming up, and then
That's
we're
right.
going to get Michael over here. Awesome. Thank you so much. We're going to be right back with a brief word from our friends at Motivity Solutions, the KPI of the week. And so let's check it out. Here we go with John Maynil, Vice President of Customer Experience.
Thanks very much, Dave. Always great to be here. And this week's key performance indicator focuses on one of Alice's favorite topics, namely the underwriting process. And the KPI is submitted to initial decision. This is generally measured in hours, and you can either use this to measure an entire department's average turn time or even individual underwriters. Very effective if you're using balanced multi-metric scorecards to fine-tune the behaviors of individual staff members. This measurement can also guide an organization to areas upstream from underwriting that contribute to this initial cycle time, like processing, setup, or even sales, to help ensure that people in those areas produce complete and accurate files that make the absolute best use of the underwriter's time. So the broad scope makes this a very powerful metric and shows yet again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will thank you again and turn it back to you.
Appreciate it so much. Good teamwork with them. Motivity Solutions is here with them. They're a part of Lenders One, and I had a chance to sit down with them while here. So good partnership all the way around. Good to have partners who have partners. So it's good when you have common partners here. We're really excited about that. Prophet Doctor, talk about a good partnership. Good to have you on the podcast. And so much for my bragging. I think we got it all figured out. But the one thing you can't control is the internet. And that's,
well, it's a weird feeling to be in the back seat of a little Cessna 172 taking off, and you look up and the plane's moving and the pilot's not sitting there, so you jump up and you go, "Oh my gosh, I guess we should go up." So it's a weird sensation to realize, where's Dave?
Where's Dave?
Yeah, well, glad you're back. Joe and I were like, "Are we live? Is this on?"
Well, it's good.
I have two points, two quick points, Dave. No, because I know you're running fast today, and I'll drop after this. And that is, there's two things coming up, and they're both relating to dates. So first thing we've got is we've got some tax filing deadlines. March the 15th, not 10 days away, is filing deadline for S-corporations. That would be like an LLC that adopted C-corp treatment, that then adopted S-corp treatment, passed through tax returns, and also partnerships, 1065. Those are due the 15th of March, coming up quickly. The corporation filing, the 1120 filing form, isn't due until mid-April. Actually, this year, the filing deadline is the 17th for people. So the individual returns aren't due until April the 17th. So we got a couple extra days to hold on to our money. The other thing I want to talk about, Dave, is April the 4th. On April the 4th, that's when we start our accounting webinar. We're going to launch that again, and we're going to teach people how to build a financial roadmap, how to improve operational efficiency, how to improve financial results, and as a special bonus for this session, for joining up for this 5-session, we're going to talk about how to create the strategy for success that's used by Fortune 100 companies. We're going to cover that as well. So it's accounting, it's finance, it's measurement, it's hedging, it's how to count the numbers, but then it's what to do with the numbers once you've got good numbers. So that's coming up soon. So go to mba.org, education, sign up. Look forward to seeing you there.
Well, it is such a good webinar. And for those of you saying, well, I'm not an accounting person, you want to get signed up for this because Andy Schell has a gift at making the most complex understandable for us non-accountant types. He's really good at it. And for those of you who think you know it all, he'll challenge your learning too. So don't worry. He's not going to dumb it down. He'll be going strong. Andy, thanks so much for being here. And I know you got to drop. Okay. You're welcome to participate all the way through if you want. Good to have your feedback in. But I understand you have to go. So have a blessed day. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. Yeah, you have fun at the conference.
We will thoroughly enjoy it. So good, folks, to have everyone here with us. We're going to run out to our sponsor, Black Knight. So grateful to have them as a sponsor. And then we got Michael Coons, President and CEO of Lenders One here. And we're going to get an update right from the guy who's responsible for it all. Right back after this quick break.
Did you know that the impact from Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria has caused historic damage to thousands of homeowners in the impacted areas? The results reported by Black Knight's data and analytics team state that there were 4.38 million mortgage properties within the Harvey and Irma FEMA declared disaster areas. An estimate of just over 400,000 mortgage properties in Puerto Rico as a whole and the entire territory has been declared. Altogether, these properties represent approximately $755 billion in unpaid principal balances. Identifying properties damaged by these devastating storms is cumbersome and time-consuming for servicers. So in order to help, Black Knight has introduced disaster tracking capabilities within its LoanSphere MSP servicing system. The new functionality actually sweeps servicing portfolios to quickly identify properties in FEMA-declared disaster areas. If you want to learn more, call 844-474-2537 and you can ask Black Knight or email askblackknight@bkfs.com.
Oh, yes, we're back. We've got Michael Coons here, president of Lenders One Mortgage Cooperative. So good to have you here, Michael. Appreciate you dialed in. We got your mic on. We're all set.
Dave, thank you for having me.
It's an honor, and it's an honor to have you a part of this really outstanding first-class operation. I am blown away how you guys brought us in, how you're working with us. This has changed. I remember the old Lenders One, and then it kind of went through a little bit of a change,
transition
that sometimes didn't work so well, and now it is back, and it is back, I can say, having watched the whole journey the whole time, back better and stronger than ever. Tell us about the journey. I mean, when you brought in some of the things that people should be paying attention to this organization.
Well, I appreciate the commentary. And yeah, we've made a lot of changes, and I think they've been certainly for the good. We kind of lost who we were a little bit. I think just like every great company that is going through growth and transition, we had to sit down and really start to tap into who we were as a cooperative now, but ultimately who we want to be as a cooperative. And so one of the things we did last year is, you know, we have always been a very member-centric, member-first cooperative. But what we felt like, and you'll certainly appreciate this, is we felt like we weren't giving enough balance to our entire ecosystem. And that is our vendor providers, our preferred investors, We wanted to be able to have relationship management, not just with the member, but also with those providers. And what we've now seen is we've seen a more collaborative environment. We've seen a more engaged environment. And just like here we sit today, we're sitting in a connection hall anymore. Yes. Because we don't consider our providers as vendors. They are a critical piece to success for our members. And so that's just one of many things that we tried to do, start to change the overall culture of the cooperative.
Well, I tell you, how you have interacted with us as we get up and running has been really exciting. And it's an experience, quite frankly, that I've been so blown away by. Talk about, what is the value of a cooperative such as this? I mean, why should people become affiliated? They say, well, we've got the MBA, and the MBA is here and is a part of it.
Yeah.
So obviously they see value in it.
Yeah,
talk about it.
You know, one of the things, we've got some great quotes from some of our members. And, you know, it's interesting. When you work for major conglomerates, major corporations, you've got information at your fingertips. You can run down the hallway and get information very quickly. When we're dealing with some of our member companies, they may not have information as readily available as they would like. And so the power of the connectivity, the power of community starts to come in, and they can tap in. I mean, right now our members are sitting in peer networking sessions where they're broken out by like-size companies that they can start attacking critical issues within their company and have solutions to go back to their shops and actually plug in. That's invaluable. You cannot put a price tag on
that's
that.
That's right.
And we try to keep that consistent, whether it's through regional roundtables that we're doing, they're actually reaching even further into.
Talk about those regional roundtables. Yeah, that's really exciting, something you're doing. That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, our conferences are twice a year, mm-hmm. and they're tremendous, as you're seeing. Right. But we wanted to go deeper into the cooperative. And so what we decided to do is put more regional focus, where we could grab more voices that were behind the scenes that we may not be hearing from. And two things. Number one, we want to hear what they have to say, because ultimately their voice will dictate our strategy. And number two, you know, we want to be able to bring partnership opportunities, whether it's with Fannie Mae, one of our sponsors, or whether it's Gary Peck, who does some of the consulting work there. But the idea is, how can we talk industry at a high and strategic level, attack problems at that level, and then ultimately transition some of these C-suite individuals within the member company? They don't take time to actually sharpen their own saw. And so we want to give back to those individuals to help them be better leaders within their own company.
You also have a CEO conference that I get to be a part of. I'm so honored to do that. So talk about that. That's exciting. That's for just CEOs, where it's really getting people that are, they feel lonely. CEOs are very lonely at the top.
Lonely at the top.
And you're doing a lot to bring that and re-erase some of that loneliness, creating a community there.
Yeah,
talk about that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I think we find at these is, you know, a lot of these C-level executives start mastermind groups of their own, and you know, they've really utilized this community. But we wanted to give back, because so often, you know, and over the last 5 years, the growth has been steady. It's been very reactive sometimes in nature.
Right.
And guys and gals don't sit down and say, okay, how can I start to create a more focused strategy that starts to look at 3 to 5 to 10 years of my business? Because now we've got to get creative. We've got to be better than we ever have before. So we're going to start peeling back the onion to how to create a strategy. That's where you're going to be so instrumental, is sitting down with these CEOs and saying, okay, do you have a strategy, number one? Then number two is, okay, let's work on really peeling the layers back so that we create a bottoms-up look at how we're going to run our business. And then the most important thing is we execute on that. So we're really excited about what that will do. And that's really, we want them to be a part of that, so we don't charge for that. That's just something we want to bring those folks in, like-minded individuals, typically 20 to 25 CEOs, and you just can't beat that intimacy.
Yeah, that's so important. I like what the SEAL Team 6 says. They said, you know, we go in with a strategy until the bullets start flying, and typically the strategies fly apart, and then it's like, what do we do now? And so it's all the contingency. And I think when you bring these guys together and they start hearing about each other's contingent plans, if this happens, then we're looking at this and that, just invaluable.
That's right.
What other things should we be looking forward to as you look forward to the future? You've done a marvelous job, and I really compliment you, Michael, on what you've done to turn this thing around to be such a powerful, dynamic organization.
Thank you. What
do we have to look forward to?
As we started to think about who we want to be. You know, there's an old book out there called the Disciplines of Market Leaders, written back in the early 90s.
That book.
And really the cliff notes of it is, it hones in and it says, okay, if you can be great at one of these three things, you're going to have a great organization. And those three things are, one is operational efficiency, the other is new product innovation, and then the third, of course, is customer intimacy.
Yeah.
And so we said, you know what, we're going to be great at two, and we're going to have acceptable levels at the third because we want to raise our own bar. We knew we were very good on the intimacy side, but we could get better. And that was really that kind of that relationship management component,
right,
I talked about earlier. But within that, we have aspirations to grow this cooperative. You know, we had a record year this past year in terms of new member acquisition. 31 new members came on. We want to go 50 plus this year. So we've got great growth expectations. We want to continue to drive partnerships and really create more utilization of our partnerships from our members. And then we looked at the new product innovation side and said, you know what? We have the strongest voices out there in the industry that are saying, these are the critical problems. And we said, you know, we want to play a larger role in that. So we're launching a product here at conference called Trellix eClosing.
Wow.
And it's going to start the digital mortgage on the back end of things. And our goal is to continue to evolve that. That's one area. We're going to get into the talent solutions area. We start to help our members acquire, retain, and grow talent. And then finally, where you're going to be a great asset for us is we're going to start walking into member shops and we're going to help them from a process improvement,
yes,
from an operational efficiency, from a Lean and Six Sigma. That's where we're taking a more intimate role inside of the member shop. So these are just a few of the things that we're doing in addition to the way the cooperative has always been built. So
that's outstanding. It's just an honor that you take a few minutes. I know you have a hugely busy schedule here with all that you're responsible for. Thanks so much for taking the time to be here with us.
My
really
pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Honored to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
And really excited.
We welcome you.
Yeah, well, we're pretty. Well, thanks for making space for us to be here and to be able to do a podcast live from the show.
Scottsdale's not a bad venue to be.
Not a bad place. No, that's for sure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Folks, we're going to take a quick break from one of our newest sponsors. Very excited about this sponsor that's come on board to be with us, Knowledge Coop. And we've got a word from Nathan. So, Nathan, what you got for us?
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips and make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
So good to have you back, everybody. Appreciate all of our listeners. So many of you dialed in from so many different places. It's always fun to see how many parts of the U.S. and globe we're reaching. We truly have a global outreach. It's really kind of amazing. One of the things that we get the privilege of doing on this podcast is interviewing leaders. And today we have Sean Buckner, who's president and CEO of Informative Research. One of the things I like best about this company, I've used them many times with the three mortgage banking companies that I was a partner in, ran or was either CEO or was it part of the executive team. We used Informative Research. And I was thinking, I started doing some research, and I realized this is a family-owned company. Sean is the second generation. It was his dad that started the business, and there's going to be a third and even a fourth generation. The fourth generation is just kind of going through school, so they're coming up. But we're excited to have the second generation president, CEO with us, Sean Buckner. Thanks so much for joining us, friend.
David, it's good to be here today, especially in this beautiful resort here in Phoenix.
It is exciting to have you here. Let our audience that might not know who you are, give us introduction to yourself and the business.
Oh, okay. So about myself. So I went to work for Informative Research in 1978, fresh out of college. Went to work for my dad just as I was graduating and stayed in the business ever since. Never really
got out
of the business. Just stayed in the family business with my five brothers and sisters.
Five brothers and sisters.
You know, work for
myself. So you drew the straw that got to be the CEO of the family business.
Well, that's
okay. Is that a good long straw or short straw?
Okay, we're going back 39 years.
Oh, yeah.
So you fast forward. So the four stockholders and my two sisters and my two brothers, one of the brothers is no longer involved. Of course, my parents have since passed on.
Oh,
my mom also was involved with the business in the early days as well. So when I say, I mean, the roots of this are
deep.
Family from day one.
That's awesome. I love family businesses. And Sean, you were also highlighted in the Housing Wire. You received the Vanguard Award and a winner. Talk about that. That's a real honor.
Oh, that's interesting. But in all truthfulness, that really doesn't belong to me. They had to pick somebody, and they picked me at Informative Research. But it represents more of the innovation, the good things that Informative Research is doing in the marketplace right now, especially in the area of technology and technology leadership.
Well, one of the things your company is so well known for is the culture that's there. How have you created that with it being a family-owned company? Is that made it easier to create the kind of really positive culture that's there, or how have you created the great culture?
Yeah, that's, you know, so if you think of family, you know, we can project into, you know, so what is culture? I guess the culture in a company is really about its soul. It's the soul of a company. And so we have a lot of family values that we apply to our daily culture. And what that really means, I think, is, you know, there's a lot of openness in the environment, a lot of openness to one another, a lot of openness to opinion, a lot of openness to divergent approaches to solutions, and including we even have a lot of open door policy. We're not a real siloed organization. We're flat organization. So doors are open in the executive offices and the management offices and throughout the company.
I think that openness and being able to be approachable, I want to have you on and feature you on the Lincoln on Leadership podcast that we do. I really want to talk about that because leadership is such a big part. You guys have played such an instrumental role of leadership, both internally inside your company, but also to the industry. One of the leaders that we interviewed at one point in time says it was John Robbins. He says, some of what I learned about leadership was what not to do. He was in an elevator and riding up to this thing, and they asked the CEO if he was going to be attending this event, and he says, no, I don't associate with the little people. And you sit and listen to that, such an example of not having an open door policy, of putting such a distance, and that is not what goes on at your company. But yet there's times where do you set up the boundaries? I think that's one of the things when it comes to culture and leadership and open door policy. I mean, what kind of boundaries do you put on that?
Well, we have chain of command. So, you know, we've got the management and their various responsibilities and their roles, and they're clearly delineated. However, my dad used to have a saying, he'd say, fight up and smile down.
Fight up and smile down. That's good. That's good.
And he also used to say, if you have an idea, or if you have something that needs fixing, that you said, don't complain downward, complain upward.
That's good.
Complain, make sure you go up. And you, not only do you have an opportunity, but you actually have an obligation to solve a problem by going to the people that can make the changes in the organization.
That's good. You guys just recently launched, if I understand correctly, a new look last year at the NBA Denver conference. Why such a long and rich history, and why rebranding, and why now? I mean, this is the first real serious rebranding you've done of the company?
Yeah, it is. Well, we've rebranded over the years, but this latest rebrand represents a you know, we're a 72-year-old company. So, we've in the last, I'd say, since 2012, we're an old new company. We've stepped into a new identity. We've become very assertive with our technology development, and I think that the rebranding mirrors the developments that are taking place and the new product development, a lot of our strategic partnerships that we're working on and the platform that we've chosen.
Right.
So I think the rebranding is really just an outgrowth of really what's happening organizationally.
Yeah. Is it also in response to where the mortgage industry, the whole industry is going and your perception? Talk about that. I'm really interested in hearing your perspective on where this industry is headed and how you've had to make the adjustments. And explain some of the insights as it relates to the rebranding.
So, you know, as an old company, we've been blessed. We've enjoyed some success, and I suppose it'd be easy to you might say, rest on our laurels and enjoy that success. But we've made the decision, and you might even say some that do that also may stay in a position of not changing out of fear. They don't want to continually innovate.
Right.
And fear oftentimes will keep us from innovation.
So true.
So we made a strategic decision internally with our management team that we weren't going to put our trust in fear. Rather, we were going to recognize the development, the tea leaves in the industry, or where the market's going, and we were going to be taking a leadership role.
Good.
In the area of innovation. As a matter of fact, that's part of our vision for the next 5 years, is to be hopefully at one point recognized technology innovator. And
it is, and so much of this is becoming technology driven, and with more digitization of the industry, as more issues get around security, especially when you look at the security breach that we experienced at Equifax, and it is still a huge concern for most in the industry. As the company in a post data breach world, what are you doing as far as addressing this? What are you doing to protect the data that you have so much of? And that's just a big issue.
It certainly is. It's one of the preeminent issues, you know, when our partners are looking at us from a vendor standpoint, the first thing that they're asking about is security. They want to know how we manage data, not only data in transit, that is, between the communications,
right,
but also data at rest. And so we have a great responsibility to protect that. So Informative Research early on went and obtained security certifications that really aren't required. There's only really one required certification in the business, which is one of the repositories. It's called the EI3PA.
EI3PA. Yeah. I can't remember. I can't believe I remembered that. So, yes, alphabet soup.
Don't
so
ask what me is, what that stands for. Yeah,
so what does that certification give you? And then did you go beyond that then?
So we did.
Oh, wow.
So the EI3PA, I think the roots of an EI3PA through the Experian certification is really PCI-based. And PCI certification is the credit card industry certification.
Yeah.
That actually represents 800 different checkpoints that we don't control, that they control. So we went and got the PCI certification, and then we even took it a third step, which is the new SOC certification. We're actually working on a fourth certification right now. So we've taken security really probably to its...
Good. Congratulations. It's so important. You can put your mind to ease when you're working with Informative Research listeners. And it's so important that people do their due diligence on the vendors that they're using. There are people not approaching it with this level of security. It's like, it's what's the minimum I can do to get by? And you guys are going that far out. That really shows and accentuates and highlights the leadership that you're bringing and the security. So what advice would you give those lenders that are out there shopping for vendors today?
Good question. So, of course, when you think in data security in the context of shopping for vendors, data security is going to be preeminent for any lender who wants to not be worrying about that component of the relationship. And surprisingly, this is an area that is getting a lot more attention today. I think it's going to continue, even at the legislative level, get more attention.
Wow, yeah. I believe it.
But I would say focus on, first of all, determine what your needs are in terms of data security. Make sure that the vendor has the proper certifications. As an example, we have EI3PA and PCI, but our industry only requires EI3PA. We went and got the credit card certification because it adds the additional protections for various levels of customers, not just we're not just dealing with mortgage lenders, we're dealing also in the consumer space.
So as you look at an industry right now that's shifting from refinancing to the purchase market, how are you helping your clients adapt to this new competitive market?
a lot of new product development. We've got some exciting stuff coming out.
Product development. I mean, this is crazy. That's like the most boring square thing. I mean, what kind of level of innovation? That's exciting. I love hearing that. Or is that just a buzzword? Or no, I know you guys are actually doing some things. I'm so excited to hear about it.
Thanks, Leek. As opposed to internet, there has been some boring times in my 39-year career. But I have to say, when I mentioned that we're an old new company, we have.
I like that. An old new company. That's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
Or a new old company.
Or a new old or old new, whatever.
We have stepped into this very aggressively into this innovation. We have some wonderful talent that we've brought on to that are helping us develop new products. We're excited about, as an example, I'll just give you one good example. Got a new product called Text-to-Qual.
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 So obviously that involves texting, as in like your cell phone text, and then to qualify?
Yeah.
Wow.
We unveiled that at the MBA last October. And
we are dealing with a mobile. Everything's getting mobile. It's so critical, and it's so important that we have that you're addressing that. That's awesome.
Well, that's a cool product. We're just getting ready to launch. It's been in beta, but it's a soft inquiry. Well, it's really cool. So if the lender has a partnership with a real estate company, the consumer's out in front of the home and is interested in the home, curbside.
Right.
The consumer can take their phone. And there's a number below the real estate sign in partnership with the lender and the real estate agent. And they can text the number in and get a qualification within 60 seconds specifically on that home.
Wow.
And we have some beta partners right now that even have call centers where if the consumer elects, they can switch over and talk to the consumer within 1 minute of that pre-qualification curbside in front of that home.
That's really good. And I'm going to let Alan jump in here with a question, because when you get into technology, Alan Pollock is not that. You're not going to have any headphones. Just set those down. So he's joining us with a mic, a handheld mic. Alan?
First, I just wanted to bring up, you mentioned data security at rest, and that seems to be a conversation I'm having with a lot of people. And I think folks are starting to realize that having a database in your office or having a database in the cloud is one part of it, but actually securing that data at rest. So I think that's something that we have to really almost help be advisors to the people that we work with and help them learn that, hey, you need to start looking at this. But anyways, I wanted to ask you real quick, you know, are you starting to feel that people are adapting to that and it's easy to work with them, or you think that the industry has to catch up as a whole?
Well, I think a lot of our lender partners are recognizing it through their own liability. They recognize that, you know, they've got tremendous liability. So they want to be partnered with companies that have the ability to protect that data. As an example, when they connect with Informative, we have 47 different applications in our company, but the way they're set up, they're disparate applications. So even though we have the PCI, the EI3PA, and the SOC 2 certifications, if we were breached, you would have to go through firewalls in every one of those applications.
Yeah. So we had a chance to catch up last night, and I was very impressed with really what you guys have been doing and the amount of data you have and that rich data. And today's keynote speaker talked about data and the art of, you know, of learning what that data is. And, you know, we were talking last night a little bit about that data and what you're doing. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's the really, really exciting new area. David, you mentioned this old new company. So the data science is a burgeoning new area for mortgage. You know, we're a staid conservative industry, but this idea of data science and melding a lot of the different sources of data for the use of, well, specifically for risk retention, wallet share, and lead gen. Those four areas, there's this huge potential to start taking these numerous sources of data to give predictive benefits to the lender for lead gen or for risk or for retention or for wallet share. There's just so many exciting uses.
So you're productizing a lot of the data, right? You have this big mine of data, you're working it, you're looking at it, and you're creating products. So I can only imagine that throughout the rest of this year and even into next year, you're going to come out with some really unique things that people may not even realize that were out there.
Yeah, we're in strategic dialogues with a couple partners right now to get these data into lenders' hands for the use, and it has just really exciting potential, particularly in the area of cost savings for lenders.
Yeah.
The costs just keep going through the roof, margins are shrinking, and there's got to be a way to use data to help reduce the expense of, as an example, lead gen, which is so expensive.
So for a lender that's interested in what you do, what's the easiest way for them to work with you? What is that first step they should take?
Well, you know, we've expanded our footprint quite a bit in this past 3 years. We've got Salesforce that are easy to access, just our website, informativeresearch.com, and or our local sales management through our 800 number. You can get a contact with us there, and we'll have representatives go over all the products and services.
When you look at the impressive innovation that you have going on, I give you some real compliments. I can't imagine this is anything but positive, but is there any negativity that could come out of this for the consumers?
So the consumer you're thinking about, two different kinds of consumers, really, is high-tech.
Right.
Consumer, which
the new
millennial,
yep.
Right?
And the new, but that's going to represent 50% of the home buying market. Yep.
Right. And then you got the high-touch borrower needs that high touch customer service element. What we see with our company, we're kind of combining both high tech, high touch.
That's
we have the customer service centers as well as we have the at home workforce as well. So we're going to be very hands on to serve the needs of the high tech, high touch.
I'm seeing so much of that millennials. If we look at this is the first generation that has never not known having access to the internet. And most of their access is mobile, and we're seeing so much behavioral challenges in the way they're responding and how they're even looking for a home. We're seeing the whole paradigm shift. We're seeing them, first of all, go out and see if they qualify, what they qualify. They start looking for this, and that's why I think your tools are so going to be so helpful. What are some ideal partnerships? That's one thing that just came to mind. Partners that you'd say, if you want to compete in this market, continue to compete in this market, you need to get a hold of us. Who would they be?
Yeah, well, so complementarity. You think about that. What we do well, Informative Research's footprint is 72-year-old footprint. We're very customer service centric, and we've got relationships with the mortgage lending community. We're very well known. So someone who may have information that could be very useful for the mortgage lender, but may not have the security certifications, as an example.
That's a good example.
They may not have what we call CRA or FCRA coverage. That would be an ideal partnership where we could use their data or use their technology in our platform, which is housed under one roof. Our platform right now we have 9 products and services all under this umbrella that we spoke about. One invoice, one customer service person, one 800 number, one salesperson.
Wow, that's good.
And so the type of partnership that we would work is anybody that's got information is an ideal partner for us. That's what we're looking for.
Where should people get a hold of you? Go out to say your website again is
www.informativeresearch.com. Email address is Sean B, SEANB as in boy, at informativeresearch.com. Please feel free to reach out to me and I'll be happy to.
There's, you know, you can tell a company you meet and you always wonder why are some companies just so friendly or so easy to work with? And that's been my experience with your company all these years.
Oh, David, thank you.
Kudos to you and your family for building a company with a culture that goes throughout the entire organization. Really appreciate you taking some time here. And if just some general information, if people want to get a hold of you.
Info at informativeresearch.com is also our general mailbox.
Folks, take the time to get to know Sean and his family. I'm just looking at his beautiful daughter sitting here right off to the side, and what a pleasant experience to work with. And Scott Horn's over here listening to making sure we're all staying in line and on script.
Our chief operating officer.
Yeah. So we got to get them on here the next time. We're really looking forward to just really getting to know your company, working with you. I want to say thank you so much for stepping up here to making this bit of a chaotic day of this podcast. But thank you so much, Sean.
Delight.
Appreciate it so much, folks. We've had with us Sean Buckner, CEO, president, founder, second generation of Informative Research. And the third generation has been coaching him. Shannon right here. So good to have them all with us. Folks, we appreciate you being a part of the podcast. The best compliment you can give us is by telling others about it. Appreciate you so much. Have a blessed rest of the day. And we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.